Our previous conversation about a race workshop in Bentonville got us thinking about a bigger discussion on how to talk about diversity. There's been conversation that these discussions need to happen, but where should they happen? Who should participate? What should be the goal? To help us think through other ways of addressing race, diversity, and inclusion, we invited two consultants to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. Sarah Bishop and Nikita Reed teach at the University of Arkansas, and as Nikita explains, she and Sarah also work with local organizations who want to communicate with new audiences.
I do teach at the School of Journalism and Strategic Media. Not a lot of people know that I'm also a content strategist. So I also do work for small nonprofits, small businesses, organizations, just helping them with their communication goals, especially in the digital space. And a lot of times that comes into strategy and how we say things, how we phrase things, and who we're speaking to, how we speak to them.
And you?
I'm a faculty member in the Department of Communication here at the university, where I teach nonprofit communication and nonprofit advocacy. But I also run a small communications firm, Orchid Communications, where I help organizations working mostly in the equity and inclusion space reach and engage broader audiences. And so that really led me to meet Nikita, even though she was just a couple floors above me in Kimple Hall. And we've partnered together on now two projects, doing the communication strategy for Engage Northwest Arkansas, and now currently working on the communication strategy for the new Ideals Institute.
So what are some of the challenges that you face when you... I am going to assume that you are addressing groups typically when you are consulting who are not sure how to address diversity or equity. So what are some of the challenges you face in kind of explaining how to do that, how to reach out to these new audiences?
For me, I think, you know, we live in such a partisan environment in that, you know, words and phrases and even entire narratives tend to be considered one side or the other. And so when, you know, one side seems to monopolize certain phrases and words, then those become weaponized by the other side. So I think part of my work, particularly in with race and equity and inclusion, the language from mostly progressives has been insular in many ways, and pursuing, you know, mostly social justice frames, and that tends to really just trigger certain narratives that do not resonate with a broader audience. So trying to figure out how do you connect with the values of audiences that may not be reached in the ways that you've been previously framing some of the issues is really kind of my personal and professional challenge.
And I want to say ditto to all of that, but I'm really concerned with how it comes across to the layperson. We get caught up a lot of times in jargon and buzzwords and things that we think we should be saying, and it ends up being empty. Mm-hmm. So how do we find value in what we offer, and how do we express that authentically? That's what I'm about a lot when I approach clients and I'm thinking about how they're communicating with audiences. Is it real, or are you just saying things that you think they want to hear?
Can you give an example of that inauthenticity? Authenticity?
Okay, well, authenticity. I'm a Black woman, so a lot of times it's like, oh, how do we communicate to Black audiences? And a lot of people are afraid to say the word Black, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that's just one example. So it's generational a lot of times. You know, you really have to know your audience. Are we speaking to a younger Black audience? I'm not going to say African-American. That's going to let me know this is a formal conversation. And I'm probably not going to listen as well or respond the way you want me to. Or if it is a more formal audience and you are coming as a person from the dominant sector, you know, maybe
right.
You do need to use African-American out of respect. It just depends on the situation. But we're not just going blanket it with Black, 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 Black. It just depends on who you're talking to, what the context is. And if you have, like, something that's really high-reaching and you're trying to get people to understand it, it just depends on the situation, you know. But just word differences between African-American and Black American even, and not putting people all in one big category or blanket categories, that makes a difference.
Yeah, and I will say, even, you know, we had that conversation a few weeks ago when I asked you. I said, you know, when do you use the word Black and when do you use the, you know, word African-American? And it's nuanced, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is also a trigger for white audiences towards this kind of, you know, they feel like they're walking on eggshells, and it's just this political correctness that is a real turnoff for them. And I think one of the reasons why that exists is because we don't have authentic relationships with people where we actually care about the impact of words and statements, mm-hmm. you know, on them. And so, you know, I talk to a lot of people who say, I just don't even want to engage in this because I'm afraid, you know, I'm going to say the wrong thing, or I can't say anything, so I'm just not going to say anything at all. And I think I get that if the boundary of your engagement is your own convenience. Right. If you're inconvenienced by having to kind of be mindful of what you say, that is not authentic relationship building. But I think it's when you live in an area where there isn't a lot of diversity. And when we also, even when there is diversity, you are segregated by neighborhoods, segregated by transportation, segregated by schools, you know, go on and on and on. It's easy to shut down when there is no person and no lived experience that you are having to kind of filter your own behavior and attitude towards.
So there's all these barriers to having the conversation. In your cases, a lot of times you're being hired by a company that wants to have the conversation, whether it's authentic or not, you can debate that, you know. But with people, like you said, in places that are segregated, How do you begin to have those conversations? Is there one right way to have it? Is there, I don't know, a better way to have it? Like, because those are reasonable mm-hmm. concerns or barriers.
Right. Well, I think this is why design actually is really important, right? You know, how you think about the spaces in which people interact. And this is, I'm completely out of my lane here in talking about architecture and design. But I do think we need to think really strategically about the policies and the structures in which people can actually come together. So there's that. I do think you need to be conscious about that. The other thing is, I don't think there's one right way to engage at all. But I will say, if you, it's one thing to understand the knowledge and the ideas and the systems and the practices that you can read about and you can educate yourself. But until that knowledge is expressed through the lived experiences of people that you actually know and that are in front of you, I don't think that, you know, I think it's really hard for that knowledge to translate into meaningful action.
Well, you do know that I teach at a PWI, predominantly white institution, mm-hmm. and this is something we talk about often, especially since I'm in the recruiting space where mm-hmm. I'm trying to get students of color to come study here. Well, they're here now. And a lot of people are saying, oh, we want to engage with this audience, you know, we want to do X, Y, and Z with them, and they're expecting the minority students to come to them.
Right.
That's a really, it's a bad approach.
Right.
I'm gonna just call it like it is. Go to them. I think that's what happens. A lot of times they're like, well, we're open. We want to talk. Do you really? Why don't you go to them? Why aren't you going to their meetings? Why aren't you engaging with them on their level? And a lot of times these groups, and I say these groups loosely because there's a bunch of them, they mm-hmm. want diversity. Great. Go find people. Stop expecting them to come to you to find you. This is your space. Mm-hmm. Why should I have to enter your space to engage with you? Why not come to me? And I think that's a good first step. Find out where these others, quote sure, unquote, sure. are, you know, get in their space, learn who they are. And that's another part of authenticity, right? Mm-hmm. You're not afraid to engage with people on their level where they are. And I think that's a great first step. Find out where they are and introduce yourself, you know, and go into their space. Stop expecting people to come find you and enter into yours.
And those experiences, I think, also counter one of the other barriers that I see is this notion of the zero-sum game. Like, if I engage in these conversations, if I acknowledge that there's structural racism and there's all these other things going, then I, as a white person, am going to lose something, you know, in that kind of conversation or process. But when you do engage, and when you are enriched by really experiences that just change the way you look at the world, you don't lose anything. You gain it all. So, but until you actually, and I agree with you, I think a lot of people who identify as white are just waiting, saying, well, come to me, come tell me about how hard it's been, or come tell me about all the experiences of racism that you've had. And that puts just additional burden, of course, on people who have already, right, you know, experienced discrimination or experienced just barriers that they've had to overcome just by being there. So I do think that's a lot. It's a tall task and an unfair one.
And just to back up, you know, just want to provide clarity. I'm not saying just show up, you know.
Yeah.
Be polite about it. Ask permission. You know, I think a lot of times people are like, well, I do. And it's just like, it's on your terms a lot of times,
right.
You know. So I think it's about having respect and just being authentic with your actions and saying, I genuinely want to introduce myself and get to know you all. Maybe it's, heck, it could be just sitting down with somebody for coffee, you know, or, you know, whatever it is. People are so afraid to go outside their own comfort zone. And they often expect the people, the others, right, or the people of color to break out of their comfort zone and be this outgoing and sparky person to be able to be accepted or, you know, brought into the group, when really it needs to be the other way around.
So when you are entering that other group or trying to introduce yourself, and we'll use the example of black and white because that's what we're working with right now. So if a white person wants to, you know, break into that black space, wherever that is, you know, church or a business or something like that, I can see how it's uncomfortable because it's something you haven't done. You don't know the person. And I mean, it's uncomfortable to meet a stranger regardless, right? But how do you, you know, how do you do that in a respectful way? How do you try, because trust does take time to build. How does it, how do you establish that that's what you're trying to do? Because it seems like a reasonable expectation that you would be met with a lot of skepticism, even if you are genuinely authentic.
Oh, that's a heavy.
And I know every situation is different.
I think you really have to evaluate your why. And you put that on the table, you know, so maybe, and I'm using media a lot because that's my world. For instance, you know, I'm working with student media leaders on how they can actually start to engage with sources and people that they're covering in the, in this community, you know. So instead of going to your comfort zone, like, I'm just going to talk to somebody at the multicultural center and be done. That's not where everybody is. You know, that's not how we engage. So you go in with your intentions front of mind. So if you're an editor, say, hi, I'm your editor of the police beat, whatever it is. I would really love to just come and meet your group and put it there and put the ball in their field. Let them make the next move. But at least you make the introduction and you make your intentions known, you know, instead of saying, hi, I need to meet you, you know, and making it on your terms. You make it on their terms, but you put your intentions in the forefront. And I think from there, you just kind of have to gauge how to go about developing that relationship. But you have to take that first step, I believe, and just put your intention, make your intentions known, and just be all open and authentic.
Right.
I know I say that word a lot, but it really goes a long way.
Well, and I want to add to that. I mean, I think this is where we're moving from this. Diversity is not enough. Diversity does not guarantee inclusion. It doesn't guarantee equity. So I'm happy to see that today we're talking about diversity and inclusion, right? Rarely do you hear just the word diversity. It's diversity and inclusion. And so back to the being intentional, I mean, yeah, I can't think of a time where I have intentionally said to myself, I want to go up and start talking to this person because he or she is the other or is different from me, and I want to learn about their experience. You know, that doesn't seem to happen naturally. But if you are intentional in every space that you live in, whether you're, I mean, from my experience, you know, it's my kids' soccer club, right? It's my, you know, the work I'm doing with Orchid and having to do stakeholder interviews. You know, we're trying to figure out who our ideal clients are going to be for Idealist. Making sure that we're intentional about getting as many diverse experiences to inform how we do everything that we do, right? Whether it's how we organize a tournament, right? It's whether, you know, how we organize, you know, board meetings or discuss any sort of decision making in our work and even in our personal lives. Making sure other people have access to that table of decision making is so important. Once you do that, for me, you listen. I think listening is probably the most important task for someone who identifies as white in this space. I think sometimes we fill the space of discomfort with just talking, right? But when you listen, people will actually tell you a lot about themselves and share their story. And if you are sincere about learning more, then you just pick up on what they're what they're throwing out there, and then you follow that up. That to me seems like a more natural, organic process for really developing some authentic relationships.
And in listening, you're taking yourself out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's Dale Carnegie 101,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
You don't put your needs first. Like, hi, I want, I. Take yourself out of it. Mm-hmm. You think about what that person needs, and does it align with what you're trying to accomplish? How do you fulfill both of your goals? Don't go in like, I need to do this. Forget you. Put yourself in that other person's shoes. What do they need in this moment? And you'll just see, and that's just for life, mm-hmm. you know, period. That's not even
for
diversity.
A race. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just take yourself out of it and genuinely just listen and be open and stop trying to put yourself in there and see what you can gain.
This is very much a complicated issue that's going to continue being discussed. So thank you for helping us continue that conversation today.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.
That was Nikita Reed and Sarah Bishop, two teachers from the University of Arkansas. They spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda at the Carver Center for Public Radio earlier this week.